said, hey, you want to do this for the first time? Because neither of us had it.
Did you each, like, did you hold up the taco and each buy, like, half of it?
Like,
we're not Lady and the Tramp, yeah.
I can see that. That'd be fun. Lady and the Tramp and taco.
Just, like, real hard messy. Pass. Yeah.
Hard pass.
Well, because, you know, stuff sometimes falls out the other end and then
right.
your mouth.
Right.
All right, well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Back again. Yes.
Woo.
Well, not successful
yeah.
in the last 2 weeks.
I didn't. I guess still here is maybe not accurate for this one. I'm back.
Still unsuccessful.
Right. Just that. Yeah.
I went out for some success, came back empty.
Right. Womp womp.
And we are in our studio.
Yeah. An actual studio.
Yes.
Well, a room that is now dedicated
yeah.
to the purpose
that we're
of,
calling
course,
a studio.
We're calling a studio.
A studio in the infant stages.
Which really, what is a studio except a room that you have slapped a label on? That's
true.
All it is.
This is a philosophical question.
Yeah.
But we have some new recording equipment.
We do.
And so if things sound a little wonky or just different, we're learning. And
yes.
Bear with us. We'll iron this out. But we've each got our own microphone now.
We do.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
We used to share.
I still don't have a nameplate on mine, which I think I specifically requested. So
yeah, about that.
We're going to work on that, okay?
Yeah.
Yep.
We're in the studio surrounded by cardboard boxes. And
I mean, maybe not surrounded. There are some cardboard boxes on the floor.
You know,
we may or may not have finished unpacking this 5 minutes before we started recording because we were very excited. Like a kid on Christmas morning.
Right.
I was like, it's here. Let's use it today.
We do have a tripod that is empty but set up, which I have some questions about.
Okay, that's not for the podcast.
Right.
Other things happen in this studio,
right?
Right? Yeah.
This is a podcast / video studio.
Digital ministry studio.
Oh.
Yeah.
We're excited to experiment.
We are. Welcome to our new digital ministry platform.
Right.
Where all the claymation is going to come to life.
Nice. Oh, yes. Let's knock that claymation out of the park.
And we have a little bit of a series going with our podcast.
We do?
We do, yes.
Oh, it's today part one?
Today's part one.
Okay. The way you said it, it sounded
we're
like
all
we're
like,
in the middle of one.
Oh.
I was like, no. What I mean.
No.
Yeah.
No, part one starts today. A little bit of like, what are kind of the internal motivators for Christians, not Christian.
Food.
Yes.
Internal motivators.
Yes.
Okay.
And not in any specific order. We're not looking at the most
free t-shirts.
Today.
Yeah.
Yes. Free
true.
T-shirts, cross necklaces.
Free iPads.
Right.
Yeah. Potlucks,
donuts.
I'll show up for a good potluck. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually won't.
You won't show up for potluck? Did you have a potluck experience?
No, but I read a story about a lady at a church in Kentucky that gave like 50 people botulism from her casserole.
Look out.
So I don't love it.
I'm not really pro casserole. So.
I will ride that risk every time. That's
If it's a potluck,
I know where I'm going.
I'm definitely bringing something store bought.
Right.
Maybe a buck at a KFC. That's my contribution.
Right.
I always like the person who shows up with KFC. It's not my jam to bring the KFC, but I'm always thankful for the person who does bring the KFC.
I sign up for the rolls every time without fail.
Rolls are solid. Yeah.
I don't bake them. I buy them.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to our news.
Let's do it. Let's keep talking about casseroles. I'm getting hungry.
I know.
Maybe this will help you.
This is a mistake.
I'm just going to jump right in here.
Never has your news made me hungry, Patrick. I just want to be clear.
Maybe today. How do you feel about chickens?
I'm pro chickens.
Pro chicken.
Live or the kind that I eat?
Well, they're the same. I hate to break it to you.
What?
Sweet summer child.
Oh, no.
You eat the live chickens. Yeah.
Well, you don't eat them live.
Right.
Live.
Maybe you do. I don't know your life.
Yeah, I like chickens. I like.
Do you want to own a chicken?
No, I don't. I've lived next to a chicken. I don't want to own one.
I went through about 5 minutes at the beginning of COVID where I said, oh, babe. We need some chickens.
Yes. We can't go to the store anymore.
Right.
Let's buy a chicken.
Yes, that's the answer. So, yeah. That's the answer.
Uh-huh. Well, if you're ever in the mood of like, I'd like maybe own a chicken, but I'm not quite ready to commit.
Sure. Do they have chicken rentals?
You can rent a chicken.
Nice. How long can I rent a chicken for?
6 months.
Can I foster a chicken? Like, you know how you like foster
like,
a puppy?
Like a rent-to-own?
I don't want to own this. I just want to foster.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, you can rent them from this company here, April to October. So I guess you just missed it. But you can also swing back in October to April. So, you know, bookmark it. And,
so April to October or October to April?
Correct.
I'm assuming there's a slaughter date at the end of this.
No.
Am I renting this?
Can you re-up your rental agreement on your
chicken?
Chicken
for dinner?
Yeah, the standard rental package costs $500.
Yikes.
That's a
for
lot.
One chicken?
Two chickens.
Still.
Huh.
Two egg-laying hens.
Egg-laying. Okay. I don't go through $500 of eggs in a year.
You also get
in 6 months.
Right.
You also get a coop, so you do have that. And a food dish and a water dish.
Okay, so I get a coop, a food dish, a water dish, and two chickens.
Uh-huh. And a little guide for taking care of your rent the chickens.
What happens if my chickens die? Am I liable for those chickens?
You get sent to the henitentiary.
Please tell me this wasn't just a setup for that. Please tell me we didn't go through this whole thing so that you could say henitentiary.
Well, that's all the time we have, everybody.
Yeah. Oh my God. All right. And that's the news.
I'm so heartbroken that was what just happened.
Yeah. I can't find here what happens if the chicken dies. You know, there's not an FAQ.
Then you're clucked.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. This is what happens when Elise comes back and we're in a new studio. That's why we can't have nice things.
Ooh.
They will tell you, okay.
That's really mean.
Two chicken rentals will get you 8 to 14 eggs per week. Do you eat 8 to 14 eggs per week?
No.
No, because I'm not Gaston.
Yes.
He eats 5 dozen a day.
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. He would need to rent like 6 chickens. Right. Yeah. He's like at $1,500 a month in chicken rentals.
All right, but if I had a family...
You do.
If I had a family of a certain number of people, right?
Four.
All right, let's dial it back. David, what's today's date? Follow my fingers.
Where am I? But if I had teenage kids who go through a lot of eggs, mm-hmm. I don't know, 8 to 14.
Do teenagers go through a lot of eggs? Yeah.
It's eggs.
If you're home for COVID, you're probably cooking a lot of eggs for breakfast and things like that, right?
Look, COVID it feels like we're winding down the COVID, so you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Nobody's home for COVID anymore.
I'm not saying I'm going to go out and rent $500 worth of chickens, but I can see it.
I don't know. You might.
I could see where people might spend $500 on eggs.
There's no way. 6 months.
I would just bakers. Buy that's the
almost,
chicken.
Bakers. That's almost $100 a month.
At home bakers.
Okay.
Studying but, for the next.
But you're only getting 8 to 14 a week, so you need more do than it. That. If you're an at home baker who's spending $100
right.
a month on eggs,
right? Or you have teenagers that are going through eggs,
going through the egg phase. You're right.
That's the thing.
Moody eats a lot of eggs.
Eggs are delicious, and you can use them in anything. Right? They are the most versatile protein in your kitchen.
Wow. It's an opinion that I didn't foresee.
The most versatile protein in your kitchen?
I do know that.
There are protein that can do basically anything.
Really? Are they more versatile than milk?
Yes.
I think so. Because on the chef's hat.
You can't just scramble
the
butter.
100 folds.
Butter's not a protein.
There's protein in butter.
There's protein in it. That doesn't mean it's a protein.
Look, I'm telling a story here. sorry. I know on the chef's hat there are 100 folds, and those represent every way to make an egg. So there you go.
Does it really?
That's
is that from Ratatouille?
That's the thing.
That feels like it's from Ratatouille.
It. Yes. That's what it represents.
All right. Let's see. How many of the 100 can we think of? Scrambled. Sunny side up.
Fried. Over easy. Yes. Omelet.
Deviled.
Ooh, soft boiled.
Poached.
Did you say deviled?
I said omelet.
I said
omelet.
Deviled.
You said deviled. Okay. Good.
Poached.
What is that, 7?
I said poached.
I think we're at 9.
You're ignoring me when I'm saying poached.
I counted poached.
Raw in your ramen.
There you go. Raw in the ramen. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's 10. Good job. All
that's.
Right.
I don't think there's 100.
We're 10% of the way there.
There's probably
I think
more.
There's not.
Souffle.
Yeah.
Is that just an egg, though?
I
think that's,
it?
Yeah.
It's like a baked egg?
Okay.
We count every type of
cake.
There you go.
Got it.
I eat eggs every day. All right. Let's move on.
I can batter my
Let us know if you are going to rent any chickens. We have.
Yeah.
Members of our church who own chickens.
We do. They don't rent them.
They're not their owner.
I would suggest not searching rentachick.com.
Not renting chicks.
Yes, don't do that.
Chickens. Yeah. Chicken.
Because you don't want to wind up on a list.
Yeah.
No, we do not.
I've eaten chicken's eggs. They're very
You've
good.
Eaten chicken's eggs?
No,
I've
the
eaten chicken's eggs.
Members Are owned we? Chickens.
Oh. I've eaten those eggs too. They're also very good.
Yeah. There you
go. I haven't.
They have a richer flavor.
I would like some if our members are listening.
I don't know.
I don't think you've given me any eggs, so who thought we were friends?
Maybe you weren't.
Yeah, I don't know who these people are, so
hard to say.
Great. Right.
Yeah. All right, what are we talking about today, Patrick?
An egg-ceptional topic.
Oh.
Ugh.
Yeah.
All right,
it's going to be a tough shell.
It's already bumpy.
We are going to examine the question, what is the greatest threat to the church?
Ooh.
Is it from within or from without?
Ooh.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
The killer is inside the church.
Like Alien.
The phone call is coming.
Prometheus. never mind. It, but yeah, whatever. You
I
should watch
that
it.
Thing was Prometheus.
Yeah.
That's the name of the ship.
Yeah. I'm with you.
And the name of the new movies, the, Aliens movies.
Yeah, yeah, it's but, not. But it's like good. 15 years old at this point, isn't it?
Probably.
All things I didn't new really are like old them. Again.
Alien is an awesome movie. It's an awesome horror movie. But, all right, let's talk about our question about
it.
Here.
It makes sense.
So, when I ask you, what is the greatest threat of the church from within or without? What does your instinct say right away?
Wait, within.
Wait. Are we just answering where we think it is, or are we answering what we think it is?
Instinct.
Just your instinct. One instinct. Of those two options, within or without?
Scale of 1 to 10.
That's the
question. I don't know.
Within. I think the greatest threat. In the American church, I think it's within.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Elise?
Within.
I think that makes three of us.
All right.
But
do we get a prize? We're batting 1,000.
Studio. We get a new studio.
Right. I'm not saying we're right. That's just probably our perspective. You know, I do think we're right, though.
Yeah, we're right.
But also.
Clearly, yeah. Who's going to tell us we're wrong?
But I do think how you answer that question does shape and form how you approach quite a lot of what it means to be a Christian, what that means. And Pastor David, you added a little clarifier here that I also kind of share. And you said to the American church.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did
say that.
Let's expand on that real quick.
Right. Well, so I think, you know, the church faces different threats in different parts of the world, right? And so if we think about the global church and we think about places like China or places like parts of the Middle East where Christianity is legitimately persecuted and Christians face legitimate threat of their own life for claiming to be Christian or for even possessing a Bible or walking into a space that might be considered a church, right? Mm. I think there's a very real external threat to the church in those contexts. That is not the context we live in the United States. I'm not under threat for walking into Lord of Life every day. I'm not under threat for driving around with a Bible. Well, and in fact, I get certain privileges in a lot of places because I'm a Christian clergy person, right? So I wear that little collar up to a hospital and people are like, oh, yeah, right this way, sir.
Let him
often
in.
Often thinking that I'm a priest, but, you know, hey, I'll let that slide if it gets me to the ICU patient that I'm trying to visit. Like, you know, I think it's a very different reality of the external threats that we face versus the internal threats in the United States.
Yeah, but I do think if you even see that in the United States, you are probably more aware or more vigilant about kind of the threat to the church from today's culture than maybe the three of us might share.
Yeah.
And I may disagree with that. I think, if the worst case scenario is somebody asks you to make them a cake and they are getting married to a person of the same gender, I'm not sure that equates to the great level of threat that exists in
or if your China. Employer asks you not to say Merry Christmas.
But
Starbucks leaves it off of a cup.
That was a made up one.
Yeah. I mean, it was just
I don't think, I think that was just one guy.
But he was mad.
And dumb.
We felt the ripples of it.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah.
But I do think that there are major branches of Christianity, and you may be one, the listener, that does see the greater threat to the church from the outside. So I just want to maybe expand on these a little bit here. And let's maybe dive a little deeper into these two options. And like, if that's your point of view, how did you get there? Or how do we think you got there? And how does that reshape how you see the world?
Right. Yeah. And we're speaking specifically to the American church in this discussion. We're going to say to the discussion. American church.
Okay. Yeah. Because none of us have experience in the Chinese church. None of us have been there.
Oh, at least.
Have you been part of the, Chinese church?
I have, in fact. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, then I stand corrected.
Right. Yes.
Would you like to speak to the persecution of the Chinese church today? Would you like to speak to that?
I mean, I can, but I didn't prepare.
Let's do with the American church. Okay. American. We'll just do that. So, all right. So what do you want to start with? Within or without?
Let's start with without.
Yeah.
Because I think we're all kind of on board with within is probably where we're going to land as far as the most significant threat. But
let's
touch on what do we think those external threats might be?
Because I actually have a spoiler alert. I think a lot of people who think it's within actually do think it's without.
Ooh.
Oh, so we could. Wow.
Yeah.
This is,
so what if we think it's within, but we actually find out in the course of this discussion that we think it's without?
Wow. My head hurts.
Yeah.
You might. We'll find out. Well, that's why that's why I'm going to wait. I'm going to savor that one. So let's start without.
Threats from without.
Yes.
You want to think about what are some perceived threats that we see from without?
Legislation. I think a lot of people get hung up on that, right?
Yeah. I think legislation is a huge one. I think general secularism within the United States.
Like lack of interest in religion in general.
Lack of interest in religion in general, but also a enhanced emphasis on freedom of religion that is more than just freedom of Christianity, right? For a long time, freedom of the religion in the United States has meant, oh yeah, you're free to be a Christian,
right?
And now
you're free to go to any Protestant church you want,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And now suddenly, freedom of religion means, oh, that means you can be atheist, or you can be Hindu or Jewish or Buddhist or whatever it might be, and you have the same legal rights and the same ability to run for political office, and I know that there are people who are concerned about people of an Islamic faith being elected because they're worried about this threat of Sharia law being implemented within the United States, which to me is not a threat because the United States has constitutional law that trumps religious law, right?
Sometimes.
I mean, the hang up is that much of the Constitution is rooted in Judeo-Christian values. Whether or not it's, you know, was a Christian document is a whole different podcast, but it's certainly rooted in Judeo-Christian values.
Yeah.
And so to have somebody else whose values perhaps compete with that, you know, there are questions about what safety that allows for the Christian church. I don't find that to be a threat, but I think that's perceived external threats that people witness.
I do think, you know, when we think about like the greatest threat to the church, like for many people out there, many churches, I don't necessarily think they have theological reasons to come up with this. I think these are emotional reasons. That these are reasons based kind of on what they're seeing in the world right in front of them, not what they're reading scripture and walking away from what the Bible has to say about the church and faith. And I think some of these do have like very real and personal things. I think some of the things we mentioned already, I would kind of maybe personally roll my eyes out a little bit, but I do know we have parents who are like, we raised our kids in a very Christian home. We went to church every Sunday. They went to college and they're no longer Christian.
Yeah.
The world did it.
Yep.
You know, like,
yeah.
And I think that has some logic behind it.
Sure.
And I think that has this idea of like, we did everything right. And then as soon as they got out of our control, it all went bad.
Yeah.
And then, on top of that, the perception of the social and moral norms that I grew up with that were more in line with my faith have shifted. And now the idea that society is helping my kid stay true to our values is no longer the case.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And whether those are sexual values or nationalistic values, it's just like those things have shifted. And I think it's easy to be like, well, now the society is obviously against us. They're no longer helping us, so they're obviously against us. All right. Any other thoughts or ideas of like how we could land on the conclusion the greatest threat is the outside world?
I mean, I think there are lots of other smaller instances that you can pick up on, but I think those are the big ones. I think, you know, a lot of this is kind of personal insinuation of how we interpret the world around us reacting to us and our perception, right? You know, at one point, you know, the huge threat was, oh, well, sports are going to be on Sunday mornings now, or sports are going to be on Wednesday nights now, because it used to be you had all the blue laws and, you know, things didn't happen on Wednesday nights. Things didn't happen on Sunday mornings because everybody was going to church. So there were these external things that were affecting church attendance or attendance on a Sunday morning, maybe is a better way to think of that. But I don't think that's I don't perceive that as a legitimate threat to Christ's church. There are a lot of legitimate external threats to our understanding of what church has come to be in the United States as far as attending in a building. There are far fewer that I think are actually threats to to the success of Christ's mission.
The early church had no concept that the greater society and culture at large would support their worldview. That was not even a thing for them to consider or even aim for. It would never even occur to the early disciples that this is something that would ever happen. So I do want to land on this. So if that is your worldview, the greatest threat to the church is from the outside, what would you say are kind of some of the more natural outcomes of that? Like how you would perceive and see the world?
Well, I think you'd see the world as a threat. And so you would have your defenses up constantly. And rather than being receptive and open to new ideas, you'd be wanting to kind of build up your protection and make sure that you and your children were safe, maybe kind of going into more of an isolation mode, saying, we're gonna dig down deep and kind of make our last stand here in this place, as opposed to going out into the world with courage to take your faith to wherever that might be.
Yeah,
it certainly could lead you to a place of like, well, we have to homeschool our kids.
Yeah,
because we can't trust the public schools. They're going to teach them something wrong.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up with a lot of people that did that, and that was their approach. And I think I can say with confidence that that rarely works. If your goal is to keep your kids free from what you perceive as worldly influence, it's not. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Yo, I think sometimes, you know, if you raise your kids in, you know, a bubble, and then they leave, and that bubble bursts, and all of a sudden, a flood of new experiences, worldviews, things.
Very ill-equipped to cope with that.
And maybe they're, and then all of a sudden, not necessarily like we just, the kids just turn 18, go to college, and they want to abandon their faith, but they start reading their Bible in a different way.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait a second, this does not line up to how I see the world.
Yeah.
And things just shift and change very quickly and rapidly.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I do think it's natural if you see the world as a threat to say, like, well, we want to protect our kids. And and there's something very pure and beautiful about that.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that means we don't want to have any kind of risk associated with our kids. And then we realize I did not raise an adult. I raised a child. Yeah. Who's now 18 years old.
There's something that, so I don't know how much you guys know about, like, germ theory and stuff like this, but there's a lot of work going around now that we're over sanitizing our children to the point where because we're so and you know, this is excluding COVID, right? Because I think COVID is an exception to this rule where we need to use appropriate sanitation. I want to be clear on that. But we're so over sanitizing as far as like antibacterial stuff and hand sanitizer and all the stuff that our kids aren't exposed to germs at all.
Right.
And so then when they catch a bug, right, it's a big deal as opposed to 15, 20, 30 years ago when they catch a bug and their body would kind of naturally work it through.
Yeah.
And there's some evidence that maybe this is even behind like the rise in allergies and stuff like
that. I was actually going to say something about that.
Yeah. So I think that I don't have the science on that, but I think that's an interesting metaphor for us to think of, right? If we're willing to expose our kids to smaller threats, are they better prepared to handle that eventual large threat, right? Is their body better equipped? Is their spiritual health better equipped to handle that larger threat when it comes? Because there will be very legitimate external threats to our faith throughout our life.
Yes.
All of us will experience those at one time or another. But are we better prepared to handle that by being cut off and protected from it forever? Or are we better prepared to handle that by being exposed to it in safe and healthy ways when people support us and care for us?
I think, you know, if your faith hinges on non-exposure to other influences, then is it really faith at all? Ooh. You know?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah. And I think we're really kind of taking this, I want to say, to the extreme.
Sure.
Of course.
This. You know, we're not saying, even if you do see the world as now, you know, as the greatest threat to the church, I'm not saying you as a parent are doing things necessarily wrong or bad for your kids. This is just kind of like the extreme version.
This is where that can lead.
This is where that can
lead to that mentality.
Yeah. I also think attached to this, if the greatest threat is outside the church and not from within, that would definitely lead to this idea of like, well, the sins of the outside are far greater than the sins of within. And so a desire to kind of diminish, cover, or play down what's going on inside the church.
Right.
Yeah.
Because have you seen Hollywood these days?
Yeah. Right. Everybody's worse than you are.
Or like, yes, this happened. This awful thing happened to this accusation against the Duggar kid.
Right.
But
With the Duggar kid?
Well, we'll take a look. But have you seen what's going on? Yeah. With what's on HBO or what's going on in Washington.
Right.
You know, so it kind of leads to this idea of like, we know that some of these things that happen within the church are bad, but we want to diminish them
It heightens the us versus them mentality, right?
Yeah.
It heightens that desire to have a very clearly defined us and to protect the us at all costs. Because if the us is threatened or if the us falls, then everything falls with it.
Yeah.
And so we're, you know, more willing to protect and overlook some of those things that are very significant problems within the church. In order to protect the larger us, because we think that's what we need to protect.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'd tell you, you could definitely see that, you know, oftentimes within maybe conservative Christianity, a very clear, you know, an attachment to a very conservative political movement, and that means, like, we are going to kind of diminish the faults and flaws of our political and religious leaders to point out the faults and flaws of the other side. And that's dangerous when that happens.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that doesn't happen on a left version of Christianity or more progressive. I just don't think the marriage between progressive Christianity and progressive politics is quite as firmly defined.
Sure.
As
yeah.
I think it certainly happens. It just happens in a different way.
Yes. Yeah. It's also like a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about, like, okay, we all agreed here, the greatest threat actually to the church is within.
It's coming from within the house.
Yes. The yes. It's coming from within, yeah.
The house always wins.
Man, we're just getting all kinds of phrases out here. Yeah. All right, so why did you say, we all kind of landed on this, let me ask you, why did you say this is kind of like your inclination, you first heard the question, my gut instinct says within?
Because if we want to talk about the American church and why the American church is not successfully spreading Jesus's message to...
And in some ways, hemorrhaging.
Yeah, yes. But let's say, for the moment, we'll just say we're not successfully spreading, you know, this message of the gospel, which mm-hmm. we're called to take to the ends mm-hmm. of the earth, right? It's because of the people in the pews are not taking it seriously, right?
Yeah.
We as a culture have taken Christianity and turned it into something that's convenient for us on Sunday mornings, mm-hmm. as opposed to something that changes our lives and causes us to live in a way that is worth being persecuted out mm-hmm. in the world, right? And I mean, we are not a threat to the larger society mm-hmm. As a whole, but Christianity throughout the ages has been. Mm-hmm. At least up until Constantine, it certainly was, and in certain places continues to be.
Yeah, I think where we see like Christianity is a threat to larger society in the world is when we definitely see parts of Christianity take the morals and ethics that were within the church and say, you outside the church should follow these
yeah.
things.
Yep.
That's where I think the greater society is like, no, that's a threat, that's wrong. But it's not necessarily a threat saying, we are following these morals right. and ethics so greatly that it becomes weird and uncomfortable
right.
for the outside yeah. world to even engage in a sense.
Yeah. yeah.
You know? I mean, at some level, this is, you know, the story behind, you know, Amish communities mm-hmm. is that they've chosen a particular manner of life rooted in scripture, mm-hmm. right? And rooted in their faith, that it is weird and sure. Hard for us as non-Amish people to interact with that community mm-hmm. and yeah. to have any sort of connection there, and for them to interact with us, right? It yeah. becomes a very tenuous relationship.
It does.
And I don't think we all need to become Amish, right? Because I like hot water and cooking on gas.
Right.
I don't
and know. Netflix.
Right. And Netflix. I like Netflix.
The HBO and the Washington and the whatever right. we were talking
all
about.
The, all the things that are terrible.
Right,
there.
Yeah.
But the you know, threats. I like modern conveniences, but I do think that maybe our faith should be causing us to live in a way that is more counter to the world around us than it typically is.
Yeah.
And I think most people who identify as Christians are very comfortable walking into a church for an hour or two a month, mm-hmm. and I say a month very intentionally, walking into church for an hour or two a month and saying, okay, did my church,
yeah.
I'm good. And
yeah.
I can go do whatever else I want to do
yeah.
and not think about church for the rest of the, I don't know, however many other hours there are in a month.
Yeah.
yeah.
A lot.
I don't know either.
There's
do you know?
There's more than a few.
No.
There's a lot.
Yep.
Just a handful.
Yeah, you know, for me, I kind of landed on this idea of within because I'm taking back to like when Jesus is teaching on the Sermon on the Mount and he addresses the crowd and says, first you need to look at the plank in your own eye before you can worry about the speck in your neighbor's.
Zing.
And I think that is this
the original
idea.
Burn from
yeah,
Jesus.
It is a burn, yes. This idea of like when you're worried about what's going on in the world, have you examined yourself first?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have not... or you've not done it honestly or extensively,
uh-huh.
I think you're going to find it's easy to highlight the sins of others before while diminishing those of your own.
Oh, yeah. I love highlighting the sins of others. That's sure. I mean, it's great.
That's why I took this job.
I mean,
that's what I do on Sunday morning.
Right.
You, yeah. man, you got some sin.
Right,
you.
Right.
I
PowerPoint.
Did, I can't say it because I'm a pastor.
Right. right.
yeah, I mean, It's easy and at times fun to do that, right? I mean, we even joke about it, but, you know, what is middle school except pointing out the flaws of others
sure,
and, yeah. you know, reveling in that with your own collective clique?
Yeah, thank God I'm not like that.
Right,
yeah,
yeah right, exactly.
Right. And right. Well, I was homeschooled for middle school, so.
So you
I made fun of myself. Yeah.
Animals, so. You and your mom's dad are
right.
poked fun at your stuffed animals.
Yep.
yeah, so... I think it's a part of our, I don't remember where I was going. I had something and then I got all lost in imagining Elise making fun of her stuffed animals.
Well, I've got something to say, so this works.
Yeah,
yeah. So the reason that I landed on internal threat instinctively, I was looking for that word for a second. Sorry for that pause. Is because to me, when you look at the scope of history and Christianity, right, like it has survived through external threats. I think it's only a problem when we no longer care, when we are apathetic as Christians. That's going to be the thing that potentially could sink it, even though I do not think anything is going to sink it, because I believe in the scope of Christianity and he shall come again, yada, yada, yada. Did that undercut it?
Well, I mean, sorry. We can certainly say globally, Christianity is really not on the decline.
No.
On anywhere near the level it is in America.
Right.
Yeah. You know? I mean, we're apathetic and we're distracted.
And then that's happened. I mean, Christianity rose in Europe and declined. Christianity rose in America and declined.
But it's still surviving in those places. Well, I think we say Europe is a couple decades ahead of us in terms of like cultural shifts, and it still is surviving, and in some ways, I believe, making a comeback to an extent.
It looks very different, right? I mean, it's not necessarily making a comeback in the 1,000-year-old cathedrals that have been there and, you know, carrying on these ancient traditions. But I think there is definitely a movement, primarily in my own estimation, which is not in any way an expert opinion, but in a more evangelical sense. Evangelical not in the sense that we use it in the United States, but evangelical in the sense of being moved forward with this good news of Christ.
Well, I mean to say that Christianity is always kind of on the move in this world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as it does decline in one place, it is rising in others.
Yeah.
And the next, you know, in 100 years, we may say the greatest Christian thinkers are not from, we would call traditionally, the Western part of the world.
Yeah.
They might be from South America or Africa, you know, or China.
Yeah.
As they're enduring persecution, breeding, in many ways, a faith that is going to last. I mean, if you can endure, you know, a gun in your face, that's pretty hard to say, like, that's a pretty big, bold step of, I really trust Jesus in this moment.
Yeah. I think that's helpful. And, you know, going back to what Elise was talking about just briefly, right, if we think about this internal threat and how that's perceived, right, the history of the church has been hindered by the internal threats. That's really hindering to the external group as well, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was doing college ministry, when I was in college myself, working with others and talking about faith with people who were not believers for one reason or another, you know, the hindrances to their belief was not were not external factors. It wasn't like they were looking around and saying, well, you know, there's a lot of people dying in the world, so I don't think I can believe it. No, they're looking at the church and saying, I don't think I can believe in a church that says, oh, yeah, all these popes who went off and, you know, slaughtered thousands of people in the name of Jesus, like, and or even the church's, you know, sexual abuse scandals that were coming out when I was in college and things like that. Like, it was the internal struggles and I'll call them sins of the church that was becoming a stumbling block for those who were outside of those walls to enter into that context. And so I think that's just further evidence that the threat from within is really what's hindering others from entering into that process also.
I think you hear people say over and over again that their biggest issue with the church is the hypocrisy of people inside the church as well.
That's actually what I want to highlight too. That is the greatest stumbling block, I think, to the world, is a church that screams strong sexual ethic while ignoring the infidelities and failures of the leaders within its own walls is not a church that you're like, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one that I'm easy to line up behind.
Yeah.
You know, like, again, I think if that's your platform, it needs to be your platform to yourself.
Yeah.
And to the people around you first. Mm-hmm. And if it's not going to stick there, why would you ever expect those on the outside to follow the rules you don't follow?
Yeah, sure.
Like, that's just how sometimes it works. Like, why would I ever expect people who have no interest in Jesus to be concerned about the poor and the lowly and their enemies when I'm not?
Yeah.
Like, why would that be a thing? You know, that, and why would I try to use Jesus to get them there?
Yeah.
But any other thoughts on this topic? I got one more here, one more pivot.
No, keep going. Pivot on. Yes. Oh, sorry. You got some of those?
I was just going to say that I think so frequently our concern with external threats is really a concern about maintaining our own image. At its heart, you know, and that we're very caught up on how we are perceived externally versus a threat to us being able to continue existing or, you know, working as we do.
So I'm thinking, you say something like that, I'm thinking about like our, you know, physical image of ourselves too, right? And so much of our physical external threats, right? Oh, I'm threatened by how people see me. I'm threatened by how people think I look or think, you know, I've got a growing bald spot on the back of my head and I'm threatened by that. When the reality is, the internal threat of what I'm choosing to put in my body myself or choosing not to exercise or choosing not to do them, that's a far more dangerous to me than what anybody else is. I'm far more likely to die because I continue to eat Oreos than I am to die because someone shoots me or because, you know,
Oreos are vegan.
Or is it vegan?
No. I think they're gluten-free, though.
Oh, okay.
They might be. I don't know. They are good.
Health food. That's all I know.
It's gluten-free. It's good for me.
Yeah, so at the top, I kind of teased. I thought this idea of, like, sometimes we say within, but we actually mean without in our heart of hearts and our minds. Because I think what we say, we try to pretend. When I say within, I actually mean those churches.
Yeah.
Like, that's who I'm really
not my church
about.
And not me. Yeah.
When I say within.
Hashtag not my church.
Right. Yeah,
when I say within the church, you know who I'm talking about, right?
That's right.
And and I think that is kind of part of the problem. It's like, we're good. It's those other Christians out there that are screwing it all up for the rest of us.
Right. Yeah. Just like, you know, when you're the good kid in the class and it's those troublemakers in the back who
you have to do the group project by yourself.
Recess. Yeah, exactly.
I was not one of the good kids in the class, so.
We know. The reason I lost recess.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Yeah. I did every group project by myself.
Well, you were homeschooled.
That's not a group project.
Yeah. Listen, I went to high school. I went to private high school and college.
Yeah. I've been in the world.
Yeah.
I know things.
For almost a decade
it's
now.
It's fine, people.
So there's this thing, and I'm not sure if this has actually happened or if we just kind of attribute it to this author, J.K. Chesterton.
I really thought we were going to Rowling.
Rowling, yeah.
Okay. J.K. Chesterton.
G.K. Chesterton.
Okay.
G.K.
Yeah, either one.
Yeah.
Neither one of us.
In like the 1900s, like the London Times or whatever put out this question to its readers, what's wrong with the world today?
Okay.
Okay.
And he wrote in, Dear London Times, I am G.K. Chesterton. You know,
love that.
And he's a Christian author, and I don't think he's saying like, "Hey, if you really want to see the depravity of the world, look at my life."
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think he is saying like,
though, have you taken a close look?
Right. Yeah. I just hide it real well.
Yeah. G.K. is canceled. Right. Yeah. But
also dead for 100 years.
Yeah.
He's still canceled.
Retroactive. Yeah.
But I think it does say like, if I really look at what's wrong in my community, in my neighborhood, in the world that I perceive. And if I'm not looking at, like, what am I doing about it first, that's what I think he's getting at.
Yeah.
And I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
And I think that that has this mindset of that's sin. And I'm a party to that. I'm a person that's attached to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if we don't have that same mindset of, like, I am part of the problem, we're always going to be thinking outside is the threat.
Yeah.
And that's where it really comes from. Even if it's like, it's not me, but it's part of my church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, this is one of the places where not just Lutheran liturgy, but liturgical practices in general are so meaningful because I think they can really draw us back into this place of remembering that we are part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not to say like, oh, liturgical churches have it all figured out and it's just those other churches. But I think there's an opportunity for us to be drawn back into this, right? I mean, most weeks, not every week, but most weeks at Lord of Life, we start with a period of confession and forgiveness. We start with a period of remembering, hey, we are part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to name some of those ways in which we're part of the problem. We try to have regular seasons and moments throughout the year where we're drawn back into that. You know, I'm thinking of Lent and even Advent as that kind of time of reflection and kind of mourning for the sake of the world and hope for what's to come. So we get this tension even just within the worship service, right, where we start in this place of, wow, we are part of the problem, and we end with this, but God's grace is bigger even than our being a part of the problem. And I think it's in that central tension. Really, we're living in the sermon forever. That's where we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're permanently living in that in-between space between the confession and the place where we receive God's grace in communion. And so we're just all stuck in a forever sermon. I'm sorry. That's like the most depressing metaphor ever.
It's a long nap.
We're all stuck in the forever sermon. Both things are pulling at us, and both things are true.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to give weight to both. We can't lose either one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on our topic?
Forever sermons.
You know what? That's what I grew up thinking heaven was going to be like.
A forever sermon?
Yeah, or like we have to sing forever. I was like, I'm not sure I want to go to there.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, like, hell's obvious. That sounds bad.
You're right.
But heaven was not.
What's this purgatory thing? Talk to me about that.
That was not exactly doing itself any favors.
Right.
It's advertising.
You're right.
Yeah. Play a harp, sit on a cloud.
Right.
I don't know, man. Clouds are real comfortable.
Are they?
Do you know that for a fact?
Every commercial with a little bear for toilet paper has always told me that clouds are comfortable.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
What other evidence do you have to clouds' comfort levels?
I'm going to tell you, nobody's listening to harp music. Ain't nobody turning off beyond Sunday and be like, let me get my harp
stuff. Right. You know what I like to hear?
On my iPod.
Well, none of our fans.
This harp slaps.
No, there's not. They are not. Even people who play the harp, they're like,
they don't want to listen to it. Yeah. They just do it.
Oh, goodness.
Did we just come for harp players?
Yeah. Hard players are canceled.
Yikes. That seems harsh.
Beyonce is putting you on blast, hard players.
We're not doing that. I don't stand behind that. If you liked what you heard today or any of our episodes, you can find all of the Beyond Sunday podcast at BeyondSundayPodcast.com. And we'd love to hear what you think. Where do you think the greatest threat from the church is coming from within or without? What do you think about what we talked about today? You can email us at BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com, or, of course, find us on Facebook at Beyond Sunday Podcast, where we've not done a whole lot. So you should check out our Facebook page so that we can do more there. That'll be fun.
Probably.
In fact, I'm going to take a picture right now and post it.
Oh,
I'm
already
sweet.
Yes, like I said, this is part of a series, at least one more week. We'll
a two-part.
A two-part.
Maybe,
two
three.
Maybe three.
Let's
we'll
make it a trilogy.
That's like
all
stuff.
Great things are trilogy.
Right.
But I think
all great YA novels.
A little teaser for next week. Or maybe the following week. We're going to make it there. YA novels?
Yeah.
Or general novels.
I know what a YA novel is, don't
yeah. We also need a love triangle as part of this.
Okay. No.
not like actually, but we need to
Twilight
invent.
Twilight is not a trilogy. So,
I didn't say Twilight.
You said YA novels.
I said all great YA novels.
Okay.
Not wow. Twilight.
Harry Potter,
can we end this episode right now, please?
I think next week we'll talk about, is Christianity easy or hard?
Ooh, okay.
Is it easy or hard to follow Jesus? And maybe, spoiler alert, have we made the hard parts easy and the easy parts hard?
Oh. Good thing that's next week.
Oh, I thought you had something to say. I was like,
all
what
right.
is it?
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.